From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, June 20th, 2025. Governor Janet Mills has signed a new event ticketing transparency bill into law. Some independent music and arts venues say it offers some of the strongest protections from deceptive resale practices anywhere in the country. The law prohibits the use of online bots, often used by scalpers to quickly buy large quantities of tickets and resell them at higher prices. And it requires vendors to clearly advertise the price and fees associated with each ticket and provide refunds for tickets that are counterfeit or that don't get delivered. Stephen Parker of the National Independent Music Association says the Maine law should serve as a model for Congress and other states.
We've never seen a ticketing bill, I don't think, anywhere do this much. And I think the most important piece of this is the resale cap.
The law will impose a 10% price cap on tickets that are resold for live events at a Maine venue. Resale platforms such as StubHub have said the law will undercut consumers' ability to buy and sell tickets freely. The measure will go into effect in September. The closure of Rennie's department store and several other businesses on Congress Street in downtown Portland is fueling interest in a new ordinance to track commercial vacancies, engage property owners, and improve the appearance of empty storefronts. A proposed public registry would charge property owners based on how long their property has been vacant and install artwork and lighting in the empty spaces. Councillor Sarah McNevitz represents the Congress Street District.
Part of the goal here is to, you know, make it feel brighter and alive and not blighted and safe and engaging. You know, somebody who's walking by in the middle of the night, it's, you know, you've got some lights, you've got some art, you've got, you know, something that makes it feel lived in.
The planning board will determine the geographic boundaries of the ordinance before it goes to the full city council for a vote. Maine's AmeriCorps programs have been reinstated and are moving ahead with hiring workers. That's after a federal judge ordered the Trump administration to restore funding earlier this month. Nicole Ogrisco has more.
In April, the Trump administration terminated funding for all 120 AmeriCorps positions in Maine as part of nationwide cuts to the program. Earlier this month, a court ordered that funding be restored. Officials with Volunteer Maine say all eight state-level AmeriCorps programs are in the process of restoring their projects. Many programs around the state ended up tapping reserves or cobbling together funds to keep active AmeriCorps workers on the job. Starting soon, groups will be able to bill AmeriCorps to receive reimbursement for worker pay that Maine organizations covered on their own. Volunteer Maine says 85% of federal administrative staff have been placed on leave or have been let go, and so Maine programs may be experiencing delays in receiving grant funding to pay their AmeriCorps members. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ogrisco.
Governor Janet Mills this week signed a bill aimed at strengthening protections for vernal pools. The critical but temporary habitat has been under stress due to climate change and housing development. Francesca Gundrum of Maine Audubon says the pools provide critical habitats to frogs, salamanders, baby shrimp, and other small critters. The law had faced opposition from the State Chamber of Commerce and housing developers, who said increased regulations would hamper efforts to build more housing. But Gundrum says it's important to strike a balance.
These protections only capture 20% of vernal pools across the landscape. So we're only talking about protections for a fraction of these important habitats.
The law rolls back regulations instituted under former Governor Paul LePage that had allowed development up to the edge of the pools. Kennebunktown officials are warning about water quality issues at a local beach after a boat collision yesterday resulted in a diesel spill. They say a sailing schooner and a commercial fishing vessel collided around 6 p.m. yesterday, a mile from the Kennebunk jetty. Officials say while the tides have washed away most of the diesel, a swim-at-your-own-risk advisory is in effect for the next 48 hours. Advocates in Maine are denouncing a Supreme Court decision upholding Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for transgender minors. Chris Pitts with Maine Transnet says trans youth deserve the same rights and protections as their peers.
My hope is that young people can understand that their identities are being used right now for the point of cruelty.
Maine is one of 23 states that currently have no bans restricting access to gender-affirming care, and therefore is not impacted by the decision. Earlier this week, Maine lawmakers rejected 8 bills targeting transgender rights, including one to amend laws on gender-affirming care. It's one of the most popular shows on PBS. Antiques Roadshow, now in its 29th season, continues to shuttle its massive field production unit all over the United States, assessing the value of artifacts and heirlooms discovered in basements, barns, and attics, and capturing their stories. This week, for the first time, the show visited Maine. Keith Shortall was in Boothbay Wednesday when more than 3,000 people converged on the grounds of the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, their personal treasures in tow.
Among the hundreds of people standing in a line that snakes around the entrance to the Botanical Gardens Visitor Center are Daniel and JC from Topsom. Daniel's holding a musical instrument case with a shape that gives away its content.
I've got a Bacon Belmont clawhammer banjo that I think is from like the 1940s. I don't really know how much it's worth. That's what I want to check on.
Once they work their way inside the visitor center, they'll show the banjo to one of 8 appraisers in what's called triage. Appraiser Felicity Wilmerding is greeting a woman from Walpole, Massachusetts, and her mother, who have brought some paintings.
Are you together?
Yes, this is my mother.
Hi. So if you could unwrap the paintings. Have they been in your family for a while?
Like a big reveal.
Wilmerding will inspect the art, ask a few questions, and send them on their way. From here, visitors are sent to one of 5 appraisal areas on the grounds, depending on the type of object they've brought with them. In all, there are 65 expert appraisers on site. David Walker specializes in decorative arts and silver.
When something's good, it strikes you straight away. You know, you can see what it is. It takes probably 2 to 3 seconds to think something is really good. And then sometimes you look at it more closely and you notice that there's something wrong with it in terms of condition or, you know, and then it starts to unravel a little bit or it's not quite what you thought it was. But if something's, you can make your immediate assessment within literally, in my opinion, 3 to 5 seconds. Yeah.
But Walker says the story behind an object is also important. In fact, it's part of what the producers of Antiques Roadshow say the program is all about.
Story is king. All right, that is true.
But executive producer Marcia Bemko says the show is also about history and about the value of objects, even to those who insist on national TV that they will never sell a family treasure.
Believe them when they say they will never sell it. I know, because we keep track of this stuff. They don't sell it. You think you would. Right, I would too, if that were a $500,000 painting that came across my desk. But it wasn't my great-great-grandmother's painting.
Case in point, Elizabeth, who has come from Massachusetts, with a piece of family art.
And it's a painting of a great-great-great-great uncle, grandfather, who was Lord Mayor of London.
Any idea of value?
No. I don't know. It's got sentimental value. Portrait hung in my great-grandfather's house, then my grandfather's house.
Did you come here to Maine just for this? Or?
Yes.
We did.
We planned a trip with my wonderful friend Julie and I.
It's literally the nerdiest girls' trip of all time.
So we're both fans, and we both had some antiques to bring, and we thought it would just be fun.
Of these thousands of items, only about 30 will make it into each of the 3-hour-long episodes that will be produced from the Boothbay event. They will air next year, starting in January. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Keith Shortall.
And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our regular look at government and politics. I'm joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller. So the legislature wrapped up this year's session on Wednesday night. Kevin, are they actually done, or is there still work left to do?
Yeah, hey, Ari. So they're not quite done yet, although judging by how things ended, I suspect that most lawmakers wish they were done. Even though they passed an additional spending bill, there are hundreds and hundreds of bills that are sitting in the budget writing committee waiting to see if they get a share of a very, very small amount of leftover money. The vast majority of them, and I'm talking about almost all of those bills, they're not going to go anywhere, they're not going to get funding, and they're going to die as a result. But they still have to come back and make that decision. And then lawmakers will have to return to deal with any vetoes from Governor Janet Mills. So there's potentially two more brief gatherings.
So there still are a few more things to take care of. But Steve, can you give us a quick recap of the big issues that lawmakers tackled this session?
Sure. I mean, I think the most consequential issue lawmakers took on this year was the state budget, Aria. Unlike in recent years, legislators really had to grapple with declining revenues, the squeezing off of federal funds, and the prospect that all of those factors might worsen depending on what Congress does in the coming weeks and the trajectory of the national economy. And there's a lot of uncertainty about both of those factors. So Democrats passed both spending bills entirely on their own. While they made some spending cuts to deal with these declining revenues, they basically cobbled together some taxes and used transfers from various accounts to plug the existing funding gap. The most notable of the taxes are an increase in the cigarette tax and applying the state sales tax to streaming services like Netflix and Spotify. Republicans railed against both of these, arguing that there needed to be deeper spending cuts instead. Democrats also managed to continue funding local education costs at 55%. That's been a big priority of the governor. And they've made some investments in child care and, you know, continued to fund nursing homes, although a lot of that money is federal cash. There's also some new funding for affordable housing in the budget, but it's really too soon to tell how impactful that will be on the housing situation across the state.
So that's what they did accomplish. Kevin, were there any major issues that received a lot of attention but failed to pass?
Yeah, I'd say the issue that received the most attention but didn't end up going anywhere was transgender athletes. You know, this, of course, has been a huge issue here in Maine since February. That's when one of the Republican lawmakers, Representative Laurel Libby of Auburn, she drew national attention, including from President Trump, to the state's policy that allows transgender athletes to compete in girls' sports. Republicans actually sponsored 8 bills, I believe, to change that policy or to change the Maine Human Rights Act, which prohibits discrimination based on someone's gender identity. But just one of those bills squeaked out of the very closely divided House, and then it failed in the Senate, where Democrats have a wider majority. So it basically died between the chambers. And then once again, there was a lot of debate about guns, but not much came out of it, which I guess that's not terribly surprising because Democrats did pass several major gun control bills last year in response to the Lewiston mass shooting. And we saw some political theatrics, I'd say, around a red flag gun law. But that was pretty much always going to be decided by voters this November. And then the only significant gun bill that did pass, and this passed strictly along partisan lines, would prohibit these ghost guns, which are these untraceable, often homemade guns without serial numbers. But it would cost $1 million a year to implement because of the additional police and state police detectives that are going to be required. So right now, that's one of the hundreds of bills that's sitting on that appropriations table waiting for funding.
You know, meanwhile, there wasn't a lot of movement on some big issues like property tax relief. I know a lot of lawmakers came into the session talking about this, saying it was something that their constituents were talking about and asking for. And there were a lot of bills that would have provided some relief to property taxpayers, but there just wasn't enough money in the budget to beef up subsidy programs. I think a study commission about property taxes passed, but that's not going to deliver any relief, at least in the near term. And also, while lawmakers did plug a hole in the state's Medicaid program, MaineCare, there weren't a lot of changes to help with the sustainability of a program that thousands of Mainers rely on for health coverage. And there might have to be some tough choices down the road in that program, especially if the GOP-controlled Congress passes some of the changes that they're currently considering, which could possibly kick off a lot of people on MaineCare right now, or make the states fund more of the program than they currently are.
Steve, it seemed like the partisan tensions were also fairly high this session. How would you describe the overall tone at the State House this year?
Well, Ari, I've been covering the State House since 2011, and I've, you know, over the years, I've noticed a steady decline in just how lawmakers in both parties interact with each other, what they say during debates, the tactics they employ to get what they want. And I think it's safe to say that things aren't great. It's not quite DC level bad, but it's pretty bad. And I think part of that is because there's been a steady creep of national issues into the legislative agenda. You know, the transgender athletes issue is a prime example. And so is, you know, the immigration enforcement bills that took up a lot of bandwidth at the end of the session here. If you listen to legislative debates on those issues and compare them to what you hear in Congress, there would be very little daylight in rhetoric between the two. Now, we could spend an entire segment talking about why that's happening, but I think part of it is related to how certain media ecosystems, especially social media, rewards politicians for centering these issues and talking about them in a way that gets attention, even if it's negative attention. It's also a pathway for politicians who aspire to higher office. So if you're a state legislator who wants to be governor or a member of Congress, there's a greater incentive to talk about, say, transgender athletes and girls' sports than there is to highlight a bill that directly benefits the 9,000 residents in your House district, for example.
Yeah, no, this is Kevin. I'll just add a few thoughts here. I mean, there's still a lot of bipartisan work that happens in the legislature. You know, there's 2,000 bills that are introduced. You know, a lot of them don't pass. A lot of them that do pass are passed unanimously. But in these really core partisan issues, that's where we're seeing this breakdown that Steve's talking about.
And that was Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. You can also read and subscribe to the Political Pulse newsletter at mainepublic.org/pulse. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.